You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
I'm like, where are the other dykes? Why are they only visible in the mornings walking their dogs? Why?
We even went down Commercial Street in Kristen Becker's Jeep Wrangler, standing out of the top of it with her megaphone.
With a megaphone.
Saying, dykes, come out of your homes, dykes. Get to the dyke dock. We want to see you. Where are you, dykes?
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together. See what it's all about.
Dyking out, dyking out, dyking out, dyking out.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that wants to free Brittany Griner. Let's go. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're dyking out with documentarian Mitra Kaboli.
Mitra, it's so great to see you. We both met you in P-Town last year, which we'll be talking about very soon, but
that's
so good
right.
to see you.
Yeah.
How have you been?
Good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk about P-Town since we met in P-Town last summer.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is coming full circle.
Right. And it felt like you were kind of the mayor of P-Town.
That's funny.
How long had you been there by that point?
When did you guys come?
That was August. Was that early August? Caroline?
I think that was in August, yeah.
I had been there for about 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like we were running into you everywhere.
Well, it's a small town, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But
not entirely surprising.
It's a small town, and then it's like mostly gay guys. So when you see somebody who's not, you're like, over there.
We right. spotted like, one. You can, you know, like you can clock anyone who's like not like a gay man pretty easily.
Right.
And they stand out. We stand right. out.
Love it. Well, we assume that between now and then you've been doing some gay things, we hope.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that was like the kickoff of like my gay summer into like gay fall and winter, which is mostly just like crying a lot. And then now I'm ready to, you know, put my bike shorts on and my overalls and, you know, whatever.
That's the fit. Yeah.
What is the gayest thing you did this week, though?
This week? Well, it was Brooklyn Pride this weekend that I kind of like totally missed in some ways. Like it just wasn't on my radar. I like barely knew it was happening. But I did cry in a restaurant, and my friend told me that it's not pride if you don't cry.
Beautiful. Were you crying about something gay or?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so funny. I skipped the Good Judy block party this year, but last year I was consoling three different lesbian friends crying about gay things and run-ins there. So I avoided it altogether this time. Didn't
Smart.
Go to...
Yeah, we missed it because my wife had an allergic reaction to dog hair. So that that feels not gay. I feel like we should be able to just like mainline dog hair as queer women. But unfortunately, she was allergic and we had to head back upstate. But Melody, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
Well, I didn't go to the Good Judy block party because I wanted to save my energy to be able to go to the Yalla party, which is a queer Middle Eastern North African BIPOC feminist women-centered party. It's just dancing all night to Middle Eastern music. It's beautiful with a bunch of queers. It starts at like midnight. So
when is that?
That's monthly. Their Instagram is Yalla Party Project, I believe. And all my friends bailed on me to go because they all went to Brooklyn Pride and they did exactly what I avoided. I really was so focused because I hadn't been to Yalla since right after the Dyke March in 2019 is the last time I went. And I was dying to get back post-lockdown. And I was good. I stayed in. I rested because I was dancing until 4 a.m. and I knew I would be. So I was really pissed off that my friends all bailed. And I thought I wouldn't go anymore. I had a show, Glow Butler's show, friend of the pod.
Yes.
A friend was giving me a ride home. And she was like, so are you going to Yalla or are you going home? I was like, just take me home. Like, no one I know is going anymore. I was really upset. And she gave me this pep talk and was like, just go for 15 minutes. Like, you really want to be there. Just go feel it out and then leave if you're not having fun by yourself for 15 minutes. I got in line and immediately met this lesbian Arab girl, Yara. We're now best friends. Like, we clicked immediately. She knew everyone there, the organizers. Like, we met in line and we're dancing together for 4 hours into the morning. I'm obsessed.
I love that.
It was beautiful. Ugh, I'm so glad I went. I was really just not going to go, but I think I'm going to start maybe going to things alone now. Very inspiring.
That sounds really fun. I love to go to something alone sometimes because you do always meet somebody or like, yeah. I mean, I'm pretty good at being like, hi, I came to this thing alone. Can I hang out with you and your friends?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the move. Because then I met her friends and look at that little queer Middle Eastern network now.
You know, I really think that is the answer because, you know, an event that I promised to not talk about for at least a bunch of episodes, but I won't say its name.
Great.
I went alone at first, the first time I went there, and I made so many friends. And then this time I went, and I went with my wife, and we were mostly hanging out with the friends that were made last year instead of making brand new friends.
New friends.
So, yeah, that's a queer friendship hack. Well,
Carolyn, what's the gayest thing you did this week then?
It was so gay on the date of what would have been Judy Garland's 100th birthday. I went to go see Rufus Wainwright perform at City Winery, and he was just singing Judy Garland songs. And he did a show at Carnegie Hall where he did all Judy Garland back in like 2006. And then this is something he's kind of like reviving, and he had different performers with him. He was there all week, different performers. And the night that I went, he was on stage with Molly Ringwald, which was kind of cool and a root, I know, for a lot of queer women. My wife was definitely still crushing on her on stage. She's like, it's not just me, right? She's hot. Like, she's still hot, right? I'm like, yeah. But Rufus was fabulous. He was wearing ruby slippers. It was a really fun, just beautiful show. And then I saw afterwards that he had been at Stonewall just a couple of days before, along with Judy Garland's one daughter, who's not Liza Minnelli. I forget her name, but she was there. They were dedicating a portrait of Judy Garland that's going to be hanging in Stonewall.
Wow.
I don't know like how well it's known or if we've ever talked about it, but that Judy Garland's death kind of factored into the Stonewall riots because she died, I think, the week that the riots happened, and it kind of like lent to like the energy of like everybody being fed up and like everybody was really sad about Judy Garland. And then when the police were like, you know, raiding and abusing people and all that stuff, they just were like, that's it. Not this week. Not after the week we've been having.
I love the revisionist history of Stonewall actually being a Judy Garland riot.
It is, you know. This is all based on me seeing a play about the Stonewall riots years ago called Hit the Wall or Against the Wall or something like that. I don't know. It was great, but it starts with Judy Garland's funeral. So,
wow.
I don't know. I believe it. I buy into it.
That is a really gay thing you did then. I see. Yeah.
Capital G gay.
Capital G gay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, I feel yeah, like yeah. Mine was queer.
Yeah, no, yeah. This is a hard G. Yeah.
Mitra's was very sapphic. We talked about crying.
Yeah. We're covering the spectrum. We are covering the spectrum. Yes, I did feel like a gay man that night, just fangirling over Rufus and Molly Ringwald singing that famous Judy Garland, Barbara Streisand duet of Happy Days. And yeah, so good. Ugh. There are moments. I used to be so much more of just like into gay man culture. Yeah, like so much more. And then sometimes occasionally I let that part of me out.
I mean, you must have loved P-Town then.
No, because I was like,
let's get into it.
Now I'm a hard D dyke, and I'm like, where are the other dykes? Why are they only visible in the mornings walking their dogs? Why?
We literally only saw them then, and we even went down Commercial Street in Kristen Becker's Jeep Wrangler, standing out of the top of it with her megaphone.
With a megaphone.
Saying, dykes, come out of your homes, dykes. Get to the dyke dock. We want to see you. Where are you, dykes?
That's right. That's right. Before there was Shiva and Cuppy from Tampa Bay's with a megaphone, there was Allie hanging outside the Jeep trying to wrangle the dykes.
My girlfriend Allie on the megaphone. We couldn't find them. Where are they?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And you know, something I was tiny mystery I was trying to solve, and I truly don't know the answer. Like, I think actually the town demographics of P-Town, like the year-round residents, it does skew more women, but they are older. Like, you know, the dykes that you see walking their dogs, like, in the morning and in the evening. And then
Rachel Maddow and friends.
Yeah, but I went back in December to do some follow-up interviews, and I was like, oh, here all these women, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It felt like a lot of dykes were, like, hiding out, kind of, like, just like, oh, I don't want to be around all these gay men. Like, this, it's too much. But that's, like, one thing. But I do think there is kind of a lack of, you know, our generation age group situation.
Right.
Like, you know, I was just like out and about a lot because I like to do that. I love nightlife. And almost always there just were not very many women anywhere I went, which like sucked. It's not even that I'm like trying to get it on. It was just like I would like to just meet some people.
But it's nice to have the option.
It's nice to have the option. And I would just like to like meet some people who are also interested in meeting me. Because when you're like partying with a bunch of gay men, like they're just kind of one track mind a little bit. Mm-hmm. They're like, who am I going to take home tonight? You know, like, so it's kind of hard to have an engaging conversation with a man when he's like trying to cruise like over the top of your head.
Yeah.
Right.
On ketamine. Yeah. That's my friend group, at least. Well, let's establish why you were in Provincetown last summer.
Yeah. So last summer, I got this like kind of amazing, unbelievable opportunity to move to P-Town for the summer and help develop a show about a summer in Provincetown. I was like hired to go there. They got me an apartment. And all summer long, I was interviewing people and like documenting their lives and kind of following them around just in their day-to-day lives, to work, whatever. I was there all summer long, and I came back in September, came back to New York where I live. And since then, I've been just, you know, putting the show together with, you know, my small production team that I'm working with. And the show's coming out June 15th.
Yes.
Yay. So it's out now if you're listening. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really exciting. I'm going to barf. I've been working on this for a year now.
It's so good. I mean, we have access to the episodes and it's everything I love in a podcast, with the sound effects, with the documentarian on the street vibe, like people down the street calling your name as you approach them. It's really well produced and I'm really excited for people to listen to it.
Thank you. We put a lot of in the moment when we were recording, it was kind of like figuring it out as we were going along, but we just ended up with so much material and so much tape that there were just so many really rich scenes and like funny things that happened. And I still don't think I fully captured like P-Town's quirkiness, but you know, I think I did a pretty like the best approximation possible without like actually being there. I'm pretty stoked with how it turned out and I'm really excited for people to listen to it.
Yeah. So you're there kind of looking at P-Town through a COVID lens too.
A little bit.
Can you tell us how it had been impacted by COVID that summer?
It was kind of hard to say how much COVID impacted the town just because I didn't really have anything to compare it to. It was the first summer that I'd been there. But, you know, I think what did happen was at the beginning of the summer in June, it was super busy. It was kind of like hot vax summer. Like everyone's like, fuck yeah. Yeah. Like, as if gay men stopped partying to begin with, but whatever.
Right.
But, you know, like people were really excited and it was super busy. And then, you know, midway through July, it was like one of the first major COVID outbreaks post-vaccine. And then it was like pretty dead for a couple of weeks. And then things kind of picked back up a little bit. But I don't think it fully recovered in the way that, like, by the time it was the end of August during Carnival Week, which is supposed to be like one of the busiest weeks in P-Town, I heard that it was not really quite that, which was personally great for me because I was like, oh, thank God I can breathe. But this summer, I don't know, I've been seeing some photos of P-Town and it's looking very busy.
Yeah.
So
I'll be there at the end of July for a friend of the pod, just Rothschild's birthday, and I'll be doing a comedy show there. I'm excited to see how it compares to last year, because last year was my first time in P-Town, and I went first for Memorial Day weekend, which is, quote,
baby dyke weekend.
and then there's Women's Weekend, which is in October. I'm like, why are lesbians relegated to the off season?
Yeah.
I wish I knew.
Why don't we get prime weather? Yeah, because my friends went this year and they had a great time. Last year, the weather was miserable. It was like 50 degrees and raining every day during Memorial Day. Like,
I mean, one thing I walked away from P-Town is like, it's like, why weeks? Why can't I come anytime I want? Why does it have to be like this?
Yeah.
Because then it's like I don't actually want to be in P-Town, you know, mid-July, because it's like overrun with so many gay men that it's like hard to even exist.
Yeah.
But like that would be the most ideal time for me to come with my schedule. So.
Right.
Like, what? Why do I have to come when it's cold and I can't swim?
Yeah.
Like, are you joking?
Yeah. I mean, I know, like, it's making it sound like we're complaining about P-Town is a magical place and, like, I love it. And obviously, like, I wanted to go back this year and I feel like I'll be back many times in my life. I loved it so much that the weather was so shitty when I went Memorial Day weekend and we booked our trip to come back that week. We're like, we have to come back again. If we're having this much fun when the weather sucks, like, it'll be so nice.
It is a little kind of like, it is kind of beautiful and magical a lot of the times, but there's like any place, it's truly not perfect. But, you know, like there's just so many like weird dynamics in town sometimes. And I will probably be going back like for the rest of my life, but there is a little bit of an edge to it, you know, like it's like, how much fun can I actually have here? Like, okay, sorry to bring up something really random, but I was watching season 2 of Hacks, and there's that scene. I don't know if you guys have seen.
I am behind.
I'm only one episode in. Yeah.
Anyways, there's this one episode where they're on a lesbian cruise. And I mean, I've never been to a lesbian party that's even remotely like this. It's truly fantasy. But I was like, you know, it'd be really nice if there was something like this in P-Town. Like, just like one, like, lesbian party one time that was just like so lit. All the lesbians have orgies. Why can't we?
Yeah.
Like, why not?
Is it just that it's like cost prohibitive?
I mean, that's a good point that, like, I would say maybe the financials of women skew lower than like most of the men. Like, you know, P-Town is a really expensive place and a lot of the men that go there are incredibly wealthy, super, super wealthy. Like, there was no way that I would have been able to afford my summer rental if the production company hadn't paid for it. Like, there's just no way I would have been able to do that.
Right.
I think it's just basic maybe like oppression.
Yeah. I think we need to create a program where rich gay men sponsor a lesbian or bisexual or trans person, like just as an act of like allyship within the community, just making space for more of the acronym, you know, I think.
I mean, that's one thing in one of the episodes, episode 4, that's kind of about this issue that we're talking about, like, where are the women? It's kind of about, you know, the episode is a little bit about, like, kind of the sex and the hedonism of town, which is one thing I really love about P-Town. Like, honestly, that's fucking amazing. But, like, I want that also for me and other, you know, queer people that go there that aren't cis gay men, you know, like, I want to go to after party orgy, please.
Why, right? Like, why can I have that? The gay men, they have multiple hot spots for fucking outside, and there's
the
dick dock, and then there's like the dunes people hike, and then the dunes where gay men fuck.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, so the question, you know, kind of is just like, where are the women? And I'm just like, this is supposed to be like the gayest town on earth. There's like one party for lesbians that's once a week for 3 hours. Like, are you joking? Like, how is that even possible? And how did they let that happen?
Yeah, I mean, let's add another layer of mystery to this, that none of this makes sense. Like, we met you at the club, which is owned by Leah Delaria, self-proclaimed Lord of the Lesbians. So we have Leah with her own nightclub, and people are like, well, that's your best bet for meeting other lesbians. And it's like, well, maybe you'll meet three. Like, maybe on a hot night at Peak Time. It was the three of us queer. Like, what was...
Well, let me tell you the history of that place. I believe that venue... It's actually referenced in episode 4. It either used to be Pied Bar or the Ace of Spades, which was like one of the longest lesbian like run places maybe in the US or maybe just in P-Town. Again, I really have to look at my notes. I'm like so fried. And it recently, in the last, I believe, few years, was sold. Leah Delaria is one person that owns it.
Yes, yes.
She has like another business partner or two who are men or one man. And it is by no means a lesbian bar. Like,
right.
She happens to be a lesbian who owns it, but it's not a lesbian bar.
But there should be some like trickle down there. I don't know. Like,
you would think, but
she's performing there. Like, we've seen her roll up with her pink suitcase, you know, butch walking around Commercial Street heading to her gig.
I mean, like, I just feel like women are pushed so far to the edges in P-Town that, like, everywhere you go, there's just going to be more men in the middle of the summer. And, like, there's truly, I cannot think of a single thing you can do about it. Unless you somehow, like, bring a bunch of women there, like, maybe tens of thousands of them, to somehow compete with the tens of thousands of gay men who are there.
Let's do it.
Yes.
Let's organize.
Yes.
Have you been to Fire Island?
I've been to Fire Island one time. I actually stayed in Sayville in an Airbnb, and we, like, took the ferry
Smart.
Over during the day. So I've never actually stayed on Fire Island, but it was also, it was 4th of July weekend because that's when my friend's birthday is. And every year they kind of like to go to Fire Island. And I remember being like, this place would be perfect if there weren't so many gay men here.
Exactly. Same thing's happening there. Even Cherry Grove, the supposed lesbian part of it, when I went for the first time last summer, was a lot of gay men. And where do we go?
Yeah.
Rehoboth?
Wait, okay.
I've never been there.
Okay, me and Kristen were trying to figure out like where we can like form our like dyke paradise, like
yes.
summer community. And Rehoboth Beach was like for some reason on the table.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, somebody messaged me or Dyking Out and was like, come to Rehoboth.
Yeah, that was our account.
See, I'm getting the vibe that maybe Rehoboth is where it's at.
I think we could afford it.
How far of a drive is it?
I think it's kind of far. It might be, okay. It's like a little past DC, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of tolls. Between
See, we can't
a lot of tolls between here and there. But maybe we'll try to make that happen. As of now, I have to like go to Florida for my massive dyke parties, and I feel like the Northeast, there should be spaces where we can thrive.
Wait, there are massive like in Tampa Bay's, there are massive dyke parties in Florida,
apparently.
Yes.
Carolyn's been boots on the ground for the last year.
Breaking my rule. Boots on the ground, Pandora events, throws Girls in Wonderland. But it's like, it's beyond just girls. Like Miami has Aqua Girl. There's like this Pensacola Pride Beach thing that happens either, I think, at the end of May. Girls in Wonderland is June. Girls in Wonderland Beach is October. And it's just like thousands of queer women and like non-binary folks, but like mostly women, and it's amazing. It's like that thing that you kind of wish P-Town was. You just have to go to Florida for it.
I see.
But we want it in the Northeast.
Yeah, well, Northeast in general, especially New England, is always going to be so expensive. Gay, straight, whatever. Those vacation spots are super pricey,
coveted.
Okay, let's take a quick break here to talk about Ana Luisa Jewelry. They make quality jewelry at fair, affordable prices, starting at $39, with new collections out every Friday. As a dyke who loves jewelry, I was pretty excited to learn about Ana Luisa. Not only do they have a lot of pieces that fit my style, but the quality truly is excellent for the price. And a patron just recently told me that as a Taurus moon, I like to have nice things, so it all makes perfect sense that I like this jewelry so much. Speaking of astrology, they have a zodiac collection of necklaces, and I'm constantly getting compliments on my Capricorn one, which has become a staple for me. Also, their products and packaging are carbon neutral, which we love to see. Go browse their site, because we have a special promo for our listeners. Go to shop.analuisa.com/dykingout and find something you love. Get 10% off your first purchase. Again, 10% off at Ana Luisa Jewelry. Head to shop.analuisa.com/dykingout.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Where did you grow up?
So I'm Canadian by birth. I was born in Vancouver.
Wait, did we not? I don't think we talked about this.
No.
I would have remembered, but I'm also Canadian by birth, Montreal.
Oh, I love that.
There are Persians in Vancouver. I have a couple uncles there.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
I bet you do. Vancouver is really amazing for the Iranians.
Mm-hmm.
But I mostly grew up in Dallas, Texas, and then I went to university in Montreal. So,
oh, which, McGill or Concordia?
Concordia.
My dad taught at Concordia.
Wait, what did he teach?
Marketing.
Okay, definitely wouldn't know.
Yeah. Oh, that's exciting. Everyone I meet who's said they went to college in Montreal, they're all like, McGill. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no one's heard of Concordia.
I know.
But, so that makes me excited. Concordia pride.
Thank you. I also feel I have the Concordia pride, even though no one's heard of it.
Yes. I used to have a Concordia University sweatshirt, and my first girlfriend took it from me and kept it.
Bitch.
Right? They're hard to come by.
Yeah. That's like a collectible now.
Right? If you're listening for some reason, give it back.
You say in the podcast that you had recently left the straight side of your bisexuality.
Mm-hmm.
How has the gay side been treating you? Where did you break from the straight side? Location, place in your life?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll just start at the beginning.
Yeah.
What's your journey?
When I got to Montreal in college, I was definitely like really vibing with like queer identity and like kind of knew that that's something that I yearned for. But it can be so hard to do, you know, like you might not relate to this, but I've always just had this kind of internal struggle with like, I feel like there's no map in a queer life sometimes. Like you just kind of have to like make it up a little bit. Like when you're straight, it's like, these are the things you do. You like get a boyfriend, you get married, you know, like it's just so simple and it's easy, you know, and I've been like programmed and trained to do that. And so out of kind of a sense of convenience, I did that for most of my 20s and into my 30s. And I did date women here and there, but nothing super serious. But a few years ago, like 2019, I went through like a pretty profound breakup that has like altered me since. But also I was just like, I am done with dating men. Like I'm not going to do this anymore. And like, you know, for me, attraction doesn't really have so much to do with like someone's physical body so much. Like I don't know. I do like boobs. Anyways, but but like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just it's not the most important thing to me. Like, I never felt a calling one way or the other. You know, for me, it's always felt really flexible and malleable. And I just made a decision after that breakup that I was like truly not going to seriously date men again. I mean, like, never say never, but like, you know, I'm making a decision in my life that I'm centering like my queerness and my queer identity. And like,
well, it takes more effort, I feel like, if you're bi or pan, to lean into your queerness, because society is set up for heteronormativity.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to explain, that you said it much more succinctly.
Well, I mean, that's just based on like so many conversations with friends of mine who are bi and Pan, and they're like, I'm so sick of men. I'm so sick of men. I'm like, okay, then, you know, you have this other option. And they're like, it's really hard. It's harder than you think. Like, not only is it like the internalized biphobia of it all and not necessarily like feeling at home in some queer spaces, but it's just like, it's so much easier to get dates with men, to do all that. And then with women, we can be a little bit more difficult.
Absolutely.
I've had a lot of bi women be like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I'm just second guessing everything all the time. I'm freaking out. People are freaking out on me.
Yeah. It can be a lot harder to sometimes decipher when someone's being friendly or when they're being flirty.
Yeah.
Or this has happened to me a couple of times where I'm like trying to like some woman in a bar is making eye contact with me over and over again. And so I try and talk to them thinking that they're like interested, and they're like, they're just like so strange towards me. And I'm like, you've been literally staring at me the whole time. it's like, I thought we had an agreement that meant something.
Wow.
Maybe you're...
Because when a cis guy's looking at you, it's go time.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's just a little bit more nuanced.
Hard relate.
For sure. For sure.
But I feel like the rewards are much greater, you know? Like,
I'd have to agree.
Yeah, like, sometimes it's not even about, like, gay, straight. It's just that I want to live kind of a different life a little bit, you know? Like, I don't really want to get married and have kids. Like, I'm not interested in doing that. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not high on my priority list. And that is honestly really scary. You know, it's like, what the fuck's going to happen to me? I'm going to die in this trash pile of New York City alone. All my friends, one by one, get married. I'm still here sharing my apartment with my like 23-year-old roommate who I love.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But you'll get to travel.
I'll get to travel, and I'll hopefully have a disposable income. And
yeah, to do so.
And like in an earlier draft of the show, the very first episode, I was kind of framing that concept of like leaving my bi side bye behind. I was kind of framing it with, I don't know if you've read Audre Lorde's autobiography called Zombie. Honestly, queer canon, a must.
Okay.
It is like this book that is so rooted in like pleasure a little bit. Just the way it's written is like, oh, drool.
Love it.
But also she like lives a thousand lives, you know? She's like, and then I, you know, worked upstate and I fell in love with this person. And then I went here and I fell in love with this person. And I went here and I felt, and like, that's kind of what I want for myself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is this thing where, again, like society conditions us a certain way. We had a whole episode about the like relationship escalator and just, you know, this natural progression that we all get moved toward. But like at the same time, the way that the world is, and at least like in this country specifically, it's not really set up to support that though. It's like, this is what you're supposed to do, but we're not going to give you the support system or the resources to be successful in this. So like, you know, having kids, home ownership, like these things that should fall into those traditional categories aren't accessible to a lot of people if you live in like cities or anywhere with a high cost of living, which feels like almost everywhere nowadays.
Yeah, totally.
Well, on that note.
Cool. Thanks.
I'll go jump off a bridge. No. shouldn't. Well, I mean, speaking of places where it's hard to kind of find like a queer women community, I was recently in Montreal and I hadn't been back in maybe like 10 years or so. And I was struggling to find gay women. Like, people directed me to one bar and I went there.
What bar?
It's an acronym.
NDQ.
NDQ. Yeah. Which felt more like a... like a community center. I don't know. It was kind of a weird place.
I would say that in my experience, Montreal feels like more of a dyke town than it does like a gay man town. Although there is
the village,
which is pretty gay.
It's like Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, it totally is. But
yeah,
there are a lot of like queer people in Montreal. But I think maybe like post COVID, some of those like,
it's not nightlife,
but there are like a lot of parties that are like queer parties, but I think perhaps that some of those have kind of disintegrated a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because everybody I was asking, like the like the four lesbians I know who still live there, they're like, I guess maybe you could try NDQ. I don't know.
That's a good starting place.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't lived there in a long time, so it's like hard to say.
Sure.
But I remember it being pretty robust, but, you know, I haven't lived there in a decade. So
what's the acronym for?
Notre Dame de Key, I believe.
Yeah.
Not that I know what that means. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it has to do with like the street it's on or something. Somebody from Montreal is going to DM me and be like, shame on you.
Yeah, that's what Chicago's kind of like, too. Andersonville's been, I'll say, gentrified by gay men. I don't know. Just the lesbian neighborhood got pretty cis gay.
Oh, I didn't know that it was a lesbian neighborhood, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
had a lot of firsts there. But it is the parties now, it seems, for a lot of dyke culture. Like, we're losing the spaces, but it's like the slow-mo party in Chicago, like different rotating monthly parties.
It kind of feels like in the way where, like, you don't own anything now. Like, it's like we don't buy music, we rent it. We, like, everything is a rental now.
Subscription-based.
Everything's subscription-based.
We're all subscription-based lesbians.
Yeah. At this point. Like, it's just like slowly no one will have anything. And we're just rotating from $20, $30 party to another.
Yeah. The Red Box, we'll call ourselves.
The Red Box. Going back to talking about P-Town, what were some of your favorite discoveries while you were there?
Wow. Well, okay. Honestly, the first thing that came to mind is ketamine.
Yay.
So that was fun.
Definitely gay guy culture, the influence it has.
Yes.
The impact it has.
Yes, totally. I made some really great friends, like Kristen Becker, who's in the show, is kind of like, I feel like a lifelong friend. Like, I love Kristen. I love her
so much.
Solid
human. Yes.
Solid human. And just like so easy to be around. Like, honestly, if it wasn't for her, like she, I needed her last summer and she was there.
So yeah.
It was just really, in a lot of ways, really nice to be there. Life was just kind of easy, simple. You know, when a town is so small and it only takes like 5 minutes to get anywhere, you know, like think about like how much time we waste commuting, like trying to get somewhere. It's like, I found like many gorgeous rocks. I've always been a rock girl, but like,
me too.
I really like, I came back with like
# ammonite,
a lot of rocks from the beach. There's just something about, especially Herring Cove, which is one of the beaches there. The sand is kind of like thicker. It doesn't stick to you the way that like finer sand does, and the rocks are all like really smoothed over, and there's a bunch of rocks that are just like completely flat. I love them. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, New England beaches are rocky. I left with a collection of rocks just from like that one weekend I went in P-Town.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about food?
Okay, I'll tell you what is good to eat in P-Town for sure. There's a Mexican place called Rosie's. It's probably the most affordable place to eat in town. Delicious.
Okay, I didn't go there. I
went there.
I also love this place called JD's. You can get like pizza, sushi, buffalo wings, french fries, pasta. But honestly, more than one occasion, I had sushi and wings, and it was pretty fucking good. Also, there's two really good Italian places. One is called Ciro and Sal's, and the other one is called Sal's. There's kind of a storied history of, like, the Sal from Ciro and Sal. They're the same Sal, but they, like, broke up and have, like, warring restaurants. That was a long time ago, though. And Sal's is, like, on the beach, and so, like, they have tables on the beach, which also there's some drama around that. They're constantly being fined by the city for doing that. And as the tide comes in, the water might lap at your feet while you eat your spaghetti.
Cool.
So it's like pretty idyllic. But I'm going to P-Town next week with some friends for a week, just a vacation. And they were like, we're going to eat so much seafood. And I'm like, fun fact, there's literally no fish in P-Town. Like, you know, the seafood that you're eating at the restaurants there more than likely is not from the Cape because it's been right. overfished. There's mostly only like clams, lobsters, like some shellfish yeah. left, oysters.
Yeah.
But other than that, like the fish that you eat in the fish store, I don't think comes from there.
Dang. Yeah, I mostly just eat lobster and oysters, and actually
I had lobster roll
yeah.
at Sal's. Went there immediately when I got there.
You know, I went all summer, no lobster roll.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's like one of my first things, though. That's also like my wife and I went to Maine once, and we're like, we're going to go to Maine and we're just going to like eat lobster all the time. And then we got there and we're like, wait, why is it like just as or more expensive than in New York City to eat lobster in Maine? What the hell?
You're paying for the Maine premium.
I guess so. I guess I'm just going to keep getting my lobster rolls in Red Hook and not go to Maine.
I don't think a lobster roll is like so amazing personally. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, $25 sandwich, sign me up. Like, no, I'm not doing that.
It is probably my favorite sandwich is a lobster roll.
Well, in that case, I'm really happy for you.
To each their own. Yeah.
Must sees in P-Town versus must eats. What okay. should our listeners need to know when they visit?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, honestly, some of the best things P-Town has to offer are like nature, you know, amazing swim spots, you know, really nice hikes. Some things that are kind of just outside of P-Town, there are all these like kettle ponds that are kind of like they're like leftover from like glaciers receding. And there are these like weird, like super clear ponds all on the Cape, like kind of like Wellfleet area. You kind of need maybe a car with a slight lift, not a Volkswagen Jetta, to get out there. Mm-hmm. And it's like really fantastic swimming. It's, you know, like it's just something, you're not in an environment that looks like that very often. And it's really, really interesting. Also, like the tides in P-Town are really dramatic and
very
during high tide, certain areas fill in with water and you can like swim there kind of in these like natural pools, I guess you could call them. And there's like natural land barriers. So there like aren't any sharks, which is like kind of a thing right now.
Yeah, my wife freaked me out about the sharks. She got like a shark tracking app and I just wanted to go paddle boarding. And then she's like, I'm not going paddle boarding sharks. And I'm like, I
think you can go paddle boarding.
Right.
I don't know. It depends where, I guess. I don't know. I'm like also scared of sharks, but like that didn't stop me from going in the water.
Brave.
Brave. Like hiking out to Boy Beach, which is the gay nude beach.
Yeah.
You know, a must do. The hike is about a mile out there. It's honestly like maybe the gayest thing you could do there because there's nothing gayer than like hiking a mile to a shitty beach just so you can be away from straight people. Like, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like the Reese Beach schlep. Like, just keep going. Just all the way down.
Keep going to the back. All the way. Hop over all those shards of glass.
Yes.
Don't worry about it. Keep going. Just keep going. Yeah.
You want to be as far away from the amenities as possible.
Yeah. I feel like lesbians love whales. There's tons of whales. If you want to see a whale, I would definitely go whale watching.
Yeah.
I feel like I know one dyke who just is like obsessed with whales. And so I'm like, dykes love whales, obviously.
Dykes love seals. We saw seals.
The seals are
right?
cute.
Yeah, you can see a lot of seals. Oh, you must take
Topless Tours.
Kristen,
yes.
who's in the show, she has a dune tour company called Topless Tours. And it's honestly totally fucking worth it.
It is.
Beautiful.
We did it.
Yeah. And she's so generous and knowledgeable and just the facts living in her head that she can get out all in that.
Yeah,
she tells
a good story of like the sand dunes and the ecology and like the history all kind of woven together. And you're like on the Jeep and these sand trails and it's really, really cool.
And she'll take your picture.
And she'll take incredible pictures of you.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of good hikes around P-Town that are some really easy. I would just say bring bug spray.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's my one advice. Bring bug spray.
You mentioned hiking a mile to get away from straight people. Now, tragically, straight people are allowed in P-Town.
Yeah.
And sometimes you spot them.
Mm-hmm.
With their kids. I was one of those kids. I have vague memories of my parents taking me there. And now as an adult, I'm like, why'd they do that? Like,
well, I mean, it is just kind of like a kooky beach town. It's not entirely gay, although that's kind of like one major aspect of town. But, you know, for people who live in New England, like people vacation on the Cape and that's just where they go in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like totally normal. And like in a lot of ways, that's kind of amazing to like bring your kids to this like gay town, but like kids don't even know what they're, I don't know what's going on.
No, right. All I remember was that like Army Surplus store. What is it?
Oh, called? Marine Specialties. I love it.
Marine
there.
Specialties.
Yes.
Like that is the only thing I remember from being there as a kid, and I loved it.
Great
I probably
store.
Saw so many Speedos and nudity, but I it didn't stick.
Yeah, because you're a kid. Why would it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. A store that I love is called the Shell Shop. Okay.
Yes.
Must go to the Shell Shop.
When, of course.
The first time I walked in, I was like, what's the big deal? Shells. No problem. Okay. I get it. But then I start looking around. And I'm just like, damn, there's a lot of shells in here. All kinds of shells. Shells I never even thought could exist. I'm like, whoa, look at this one. It's so pink. Oh, yellow. Polka dots. Yeah. Stripes. Ah, like any shape you could possibly imagine. Shells.
Move over rocks.
Move over rocks. Yes.
Oh, man. Also, there's a big like art scene. There's like a lot of galleries there. Like last time I went, we took a day to just do the galleries and do a little art walk. And it was so nice.
Yeah. What'd you think?
I liked it. I saw some good, I saw some stuff that I definitely was like, oh, I wish I could be a person that could afford art. Like,
what do you think, Mitra?
Okay. Honestly, after being in P-Town all summer long, I was like, if I see one more picture of a dick, I'm going to fucking kill myself.
Oh, I feel like I missed that, but maybe I just don't see them.
You don't.
Like, honestly,
I don't recognize them. I've never.
I went on a gallery walk with a friend that I made in town, you know, like a kind of like their like opening night, like Fridays. It's like when people have like wine, whatever, you can come look at the art. And right. I was just like, ah, another picture of the male form. Ah, another picture of the male form. Like, it was like 75% male form in some variety, whether that be like actual dicks or just like men. And
how was that not my experience at all? Unless I like blocked it out.
I think you might not notice it if it's not pointed out to you because you're just like, ah, art, whatever. But there is some art that I really did like while I was there. But
yeah,
mostly I was just like, wow, everything in this town must be adorned with dicks. Incredible. And when I went back to town in December to do follow-up interviews, and I met up with one of the people I interviewed, Sunny, who's heavily featured in the show, and he was staying in this place that was like maybe the gayest house that this probably isn't even the gayest house in P-Town. But like one of the first things I noticed that there were like pictures of dicks all over the walls. And apparently the dicks of the homeowners, they're like portraits. Also, there was like in every room of the house, there was like a picture of the dog that lived there. And there's a store in P-Town called Who's That Doggy in That Window? And I'm which yes. I find like very funny. It'll like put a picture of your dog on anything
yes.
or your pet, any pet. Then I, you know, fast forward 6 months and I'm in this house and I'm like, ah, coaster with the dog, painting, pillow. Like, you know what I mean? And then just like dicks. Like,
yeah. We saw dicks, Carolyn. What's that like kind of art alley?
Are there dicks in that alley?
It was like Alice in Wonderland stuff. See, that's all I remember. I think I just had like a block.
Yeah, I know what alley you're talking about. Yeah.
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 You just don't see it.
There's just like, something like in my brain where like I don't recognize it. On that note, we need to wrap up, but we have one last question for you.
Sure.
Do you have any gossip to share with us?
Oh my God. Yes. I love gossip.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to give you just a tiny nugget of P-Town gossip. This is something that had P-Town in its freaking grips at the beginning of the season, okay? So Commercial Street has this like bend in it. It kind of turns.
Yes.
As like kind of with the natural shoreline or something. Mm-hmm. And at the bend, there are these like two benches or one bench that was there. And it's like prime people watching spot. It is like, for it being kind of like not a place where there are tons of businesses around, it is a popping location of all walks of life. And it, P-Town has very good people watching to offer in general. So yeah, it's a good spot. And at the beginning of the summer, benches gone, taken out. And people were upset. There's a Facebook group, the community space. The rumor was that like the gays who own the house were like tired of people like sitting on their benches, and they like took the bench out. But then I got a report from Kristen last week. Benches are back, baby.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the benches are back. So
love some hot bench gossip.
A win for the people of P-Town. Absolutely.
That's great. You need to people. You need a bench there.
Yeah.
Oh, lastly, I do need to thank you because you saved the Rosie O'Donnell interview for me by tipping me off to that great co-working space in P-Town. That was amazing. What is it called?
It's
again?
Called the Commons.
The Commons. Yeah. If anybody's in P-Town and you still have to like work your job, because we were staying in Truro and had horrid Wi-Fi, and I'm like, I don't know how I'm gonna do this interview that I've been wanting my whole life. And I went to the Commons, and it was a perfect spot to do it. And they were so friendly, and it's such a great spot.
Can you like pay by the day, or what's the deal?
Yeah, yeah. They let me just buy a pass for the day.
Oh, amazing.
And it was affordable and a great space.
Awesome. That's legit, that little sound booth you were in.
Yeah, yeah. They had actress Lily Taylor, I believe, was there recording a audiobook or something like that in that booth too. So, you know, you might see celebs. Who knows?
You might see some celebs in P-Town.
Yeah. Oh, did you see any celebs?
Yes. Okay. I did see Leah Delaria in line at the grocery store. She was standing right in front of me, and she like said some line chit chat. That's a lot of peaches. I don't know, something like that.
I thought it was going to be like, you down to fuck.
I wish. Let's see. I have like slight celebrity blindness, but I did see John Waters. He's everywhere.
Ooh.
And I also, I don't know if you guys know the guy who plays the gay man on White Lotus.
Yes.
I'm trying to think of his name. I hung out with him.
Murray Bennett.
Yes. Yes, Murray. Oh, and then, okay, this is gossip. There's this guy who I met on Boy Beach who like introduced himself as like being on Law and Order, but I like truly don't recognize him. Couldn't tell you his name. But he's on Law and Order, and he will let you know.
And he didn't just play a random dead
like
body.
A regular or just one time like a Broadway credit? Yeah.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yes. Thank Where you. Should people go to listen to your podcast?
The show is called Welcome to Provincetown. It's out now. Please download, listen to it, subscribe. Anywhere you get your podcast, you should be able to find it. No problem.
You can slide into our DMs at Dyking Out on Instagram.
Yes. You can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
I'm at Melody Kamali.
Mitra, it's been so fun reconnecting. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
We'll see you next Tuesday.
Remember to check out our new sponsor at shop.annaluisa.com/dykingout for 10% off your purchase. We have a link in the show notes.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.